Well, I am privileged today to be joined by Nish Ranasinghe again. Kim Adele unfortunately couldn't make it, and we are with Guy Paul today. And Guy is a born technologist. His earliest moments, memories are of wanting a computer. And when he got one at the age of 7, wow, he started programming. His first jobs were as a software developer during the late 90s, internet boom, before moving on to a computer science degree. So in the years since, he's worked as a software developer and architect and run several tech companies in retail tech, financial services, and blockchain. Interesting. And Guy also, he runs a software company, a unique software development company focused on delivering value to clients and wellness to all staff. Well, thank you, Guy, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Great to be here today.
So at the moment, what kind of excites you about technology right now?
I think we're in an interesting position in the world of technology. On the one hand, I don't know how popular it is as a view to say, we feel like we've stagnated a little bit. When you look at the growth we had of technology, I don't know, say from the 70s to the 2000s, and then you look over the last decade, really, phones have got a little bit quicker. There have been slight changes on the internet, blockchain's become a thing, but there's many views, I think, that actually kind of technology has stagnated a little bit. And that, as someone that loves technology, is kind of the opposite of being excited by it. But I think it is where we've got to. However, we're then on the cusp of, I think, another boom with a bunch of interesting and kind of life-changing technologies coming. I think I work in IT and computers, but on a kind of wider level, when we look at society with commercial space travel, which I know a lot of people think is a huge waste of money. I personally think it's an amazing investment in future technologies. We've made huge strides in that, which fundamentally lays the foundation for a difference to how our species work in the future. We've made huge strides in battery and energy technologies, which aren't the sexiest of technologies, but again, are going to completely revolutionize where we are. It's great banking on about green energy, but just slapping some solar panels everywhere isn't going to work. So I think maybe computer technology, the internet, has actually slowed down and kind of plateaued to a certain point. When we get, there's a lot of computer tech that gets banded around as being exciting and the current thing, people talking about the metaverse or cryptocurrency and blockchains, all of which are things I've been part of. How revolutionary they are is different. I think when we look into outside computer tech, there's a lot more interesting and revolutionary things out there at the moment that are pretty exciting.
So Nish, what do you think? What excites you the most at the moment around tech? I love what Guy said, by the way, about the space program, because, I mean, so many people slate the space program, but if they actually realize that the devices they were talking on were kind of a product of what President Kennedy invested in today's money is $150 billion, right? Like, so I'm really excited about that too, because the capabilities are just growing. So sorry, I got a bit sidetracked there, Nish. I just had to go on a little bit about what Guy said. So what do you think, Nish?
No, I think that I'm really interested in green technologies as well. Having just myself invested in an electric car, all of the tech that comes around with that is pretty impressive. And I think that when you look at things, that the applications of certain things in society, it's pretty interesting. So the space program, as you mentioned, it's an investment into the future of our species. But then you think about what's happening on our planet as well, and how people are switching to more green technologies. But then, for me, the other thing is what the people or societal application of some of these technologies are. So when you do talk about things like the metaverse, it's not just about, sticking a pair of Oculuses on and then going to watch a football match. It's more about what does that mean for us as, what does it mean for us as a society? What does that open us up to? Things like blockchain, in theory, were things that could have really revolutionized transactions, but why is it that that hasn't necessarily been, things haven't found the application for that? Is it adoption? Is it because people aren't ready for it? And I remember when, you know, when Steve Jobs first came out with the iPhone, it was actually, he created the iPad first, but realized that the world wasn't ready for it yet. So had to do the iPhone first in order to kind of get people ready for the iPad. And I wonder what the stepping stone is to get people up along the same curve as some people who are actually quite excited about certain very, you know, fast, very interesting technologies such as a space program. What are the human applications, and how do we ensure that people are excited about the same things and not just excited about, you know, sticking virtual reality goggles on and going to look in a jewelry store, you know? So that's, I don't know, that's kind of where I sit with this whole future technology thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think from where I'm sitting, we've got massive issues when it comes to inclusion. Like that's something that I'm a big advocate of, inclusion. You think that nearly 50% of the world don't have internet access, right? Like it's whilst it might be an opportunity, it's also, you know, practically a human right now. I don't know. What do you think, Guy? Do you think that technology companies could do more around inclusion for old people, disabled people, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a commercial perspective, the reality is that most tech companies would have every single person of every single age in every single part of the world using their products if they can, because it's about money at the end of the day. You know, if we're looking at Facebook and the metaverse, if Facebook can get everybody from age 11 to age 111 across the whole world using their platforms, they would. I think there's practical issues. So talking about inclusion, and actually space comes with this as well. You know, it's not easy to provide an internet connection in the middle of a village in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, the cost of build out, as I mentioned before we started recording today, I live in broadly the middle of nowhere in the jungle somewhere. And I am lucky enough that I live somewhere where there's a large enough population that's paid to get an internet connection laid here, but it's the absolute minority, and the cost per mile is ridiculously expensive. So, you know, how do you serve those underserved communities in a way that makes commercial sense? And I think what we have with kind of new satellite internet technologies like Starlink, one of Elon Musk's companies, potentially start to really change that, because suddenly you've got not just accessible internet, but good internet available to communities that are underserved and unable to get it at the moment. You've currently got satellite internet options. I looked when I moved here, you know, $200-$300 a month. It would have been the speed of a home internet connection from 15 to 20 years ago, and I'd have had bandwidth limits on it, and it would have been really, really slow for requests and things to go through. So it just isn't practical. So a good, reliable satellite internet technology coming on like Starlink is a fascinating proposition for bringing inclusion. But at the end of the day, as much as I think, you know, commercial companies, there's a commercial case there for Starlink. Comes on as a business, it provides greater good. But I think when it comes to engaging other sets of communities, part of it does have to come to governments playing their parts as well. I think there's only so much in non-profitable areas that private companies are ever going to be able to do. And it comes down to governments and societies at large helping inclusion. You know, I mean, we can all talk about inclusion with mentioned older people as well. Yeah, how many people helped their families learn how to use Zoom during lockdowns in 2020? You know, we can all play a part in sharing these technologies with those that maybe aren't as much a part of the technology in our lives as they otherwise could be.
Yeah, I agree completely with what you just said there, actually. But I think when it comes to teaching perhaps retired people how to use the internet, especially people with dementia and things like this, I think that Amazon voice technology is just incredible. And actually, in the coming, I see that becoming massively important for dementia sufferers. I think that they will end up building that out in the next few years, because the way that they're delighted, and they can say the same thing to this device, and the device isn't going to like disappear or stop talking to them, or, you know, I think that compared to Siri, the Amazon Echo and whatever else is absolutely brilliant. I mean, do you guys use that yourselves or not?
So I don't, due to privacy concerns. So I choose not to use any of those voice services. That being said, as a general concept, whether it's Amazon or Siri or other platforms, thinking about dementia, one of the areas, in fact, the area that I was researching when I was doing robotics was socially assistive robotics. I was specifically looking at the research with regards to mental health, but there's a lot of interesting work groups within socially assistive robotics for dementia, for other areas to actually help people. The university I was studying at had an entire like house of the future setup filled with socially assistive robotics. And there were all kinds of little things. I know there's one that was a simple one, like it was a mug that when you the person drank it, it would just create an artificial flower to just move slightly and look like it was blowing in the breeze. And it was designed so that the family member could have that flower at their house. And then their elderly relative, they would know just whenever they were making a cup of tea, they'd know that they were still okay, going about their lives, and there was some kind of connection backwards and forwards between the two, even if it wasn't a call. So there's, that's a really subtle nod. We think about, big robots and artificial intelligence, but there's a lot of more subtle, really useful, interesting work going on in robotics, particularly in socially assistive, for helping in those areas.
Wow. Wow, that's very interesting. Thank you, Guy, for sharing that. That's amazing. So what do you think then, Nish, on this sort of stuff?
No, so I do have, I'm not going to say her name, I'm an Amazon Echo. She's right here, so if I say the name, it's going to fire up. But to be honest with you, aside from my application for this is when I moved. So I actually got that as a gift when I moved abroad, and I was abroad for about 2 years. And I do think that little device when you're in a new country and you've got no friends yet, I'd sit there and ask her to make jokes for me. there's little things like that they help with, because I was like, oh, okay, well, there is someone here who I can talk to. These ideas that you do need, whilst when people are far away, or during lockdown, you mentioned also people who are in nursing homes or apart from their families for whatever reason, whether that be even via a medical condition such as dementia, it could be there is a comfort in trying to bring people together using these technologies and having little drop-ins with video conferencing, things like that. And even as simple as I remember upgrading my phone to include FaceTime, things like that, just to make sure that that you feel more connected to people. And if that's an application that technology can use, or one application that we know the technology is using at the moment, actually post lockdown, and how we're all, we work in a remote team, Guy, you and I work in a completely remote team, and every day we're seeing people on VC and making sure that we stay connected in different ways. So that is something that's really important. And these socially connectable devices, is something that's a really great application for tech. The other thing is medical advances to make sure that little treatments can be made quicker. Advances in, pharmaceutical technology, if they can start sort of doing research into like testing quicker and bring all of that back to our doctors and hospitals and that quicker. So that is another area which I think is a really good investment for it. But it's difficult to see how differentiate between technology that we see in society having social applications versus where the research is going into, whether pharmaceutical companies, medical companies are investing in actual, like coding technology to advance it versus, just upgrading their rubbish internal, database systems. I guess it's just something that you'd hope is happening at the, like you mentioned, at the government level as well, that people are investing in these, and we'll see the benefits of it in years to come. But that's another area, I think, medical technology.
Well, medical technology, I think, is an interesting one that I hadn't mentioned, because on on many levels, we're not that far removed from the days of leeches and kind of, you know, really basic medicine that still works. You know, I say that as a bit of a joke. My dad was a GP, a doctor for his whole life, and he ended up having an issue with his circulation and blood, and he'd been trained in the 20s, and he was in the late 90s. He was like, I just need some leeches, it will be fine. Like that was still somewhat part of like his view on the world of medicine from you know, being born in the 20s. And it's not really, you know, it's not even 100 years ago that my dad would have been born. But you look to where we are now, and suddenly we have really interesting work going into genetics and CRISPR and the idea of being able to create tailored medicine to individuals where, you know, you are targeting it. Now, I worry about the profit motive behind actually curing disease anymore, because it's much better to not cure a disease from a profit perspective and to treat people. So I think this is where there's a difference between commercial and academia, and eventually kind of the commercial world can't ignore technologies. And if you can get to the point of creating, you know, new things that actually cure diseases and help people, then I think at some point the private sector has to. Otherwise, it's really easy for the private sector in medicine to treat, not cure, because there isn't a profit motive for a cure. You know, say it's one pill that cures a disease for $100,000, or you can keep someone paying for 50 years. I'm not saying scientists or anyone behind it happen, but when the research goes down one direction and that then becomes the pattern of working that you're used to, and the templates for how do you find a vaccine, how do you cure something are around treatment, then it's very easy for a mindset and an entire sector to go down that way, not because there's some big plan that that's what everyone should do, but just because that's how things evolve. So I think medical technology is an interesting cusp of, we have these really interesting research developments, but what do they actually translate to for people's real life medical outcomes rather than just theoretical and kind of fringe test cases?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've been doing a bit of research. I've been reading the MIT Technology Review. I subscribe to that, and that it's absolutely fascinating, you know, and if you think about how they've apparently come up with a cure for malaria, which will save, I think it saves 600,000 people a year, this new cure that they came up with. And yeah, I'm hopeful of the future, but you raise a very good point there, where commercialization meets ethics in a way, I suppose you would call it ethics and business models, right? But you know, also there's this productivity revolution that we're seeing, right? Like now you're able to use GPT-3 when it comes to writing. You're able to have it write in your own voice. You're able to have a consistent approach to blogging if you so desire to augment your methodologies, right? And they say we're at the beginning of a productivity revolution that we've never seen before. And frankly, it's about time, because you look back to the Industrial Revolution back in the 19th century, right? The dream was sold to everybody back then, but then what happened? Everybody started working longer hours, right? And then the divide between rich and poor became even bigger. So I'm kind of excited about it, but I think that the people are going to suffer, the ones that are really not innovators, the people that think, well, I've always done it that way. I don't need to save time. It's like, but they don't seem to understand that the difference between them having a job and not having a job is a continual innovation, continue on the job training, right? And it's unfortunate that that mindset it's a kind of laggard, kind of lazy mindset, it is still prevalent really in society these days, you know?
I think it's an interesting question you raised about productivity and technology and how that translates to real life benefits for people. Because, I mean, yes, you've got the Industrial Revolution, but it's a consistent theme that's solved with technology if this is going to make your life better. So when washing machines were first created, the whole basis of washing machines was it was going to free the housewife up and they would have time to do other things. And, you know, it doesn't translate. It's never translated. It's the other stuff comes in and fills those gaps. And, you know, I have doubts with a lot of the technology. Do they produce benefits to us? Yeah, can we get some AI to write some text for us? Perfect. But whether that actually translates to better lives for people is a different question, because it's very easy to then come up with more things for people to do and invent it. And we have a society that's based around 100% employment and everybody being busy all the time. And you know, people are working longer working hours, even though technology should allow fewer working hours. The more new things we invent, the more time they sap from people. And you know, it's so we at Pina Vida, the software company I run, work a 4-day week. And the thing I found really interesting when we've interviewed people is actually some candidates are almost resistant to the idea of working a 4-day week. There was a poll I saw on somebody's LinkedIn recently that was, you know, what should we do about the 5-day week? Should we get rid of it, leave it as it is, or tinker around the edges? And only 30% of people wanted to reduce it. Most people, well, we can tinker a little bit with the 5-day week. So society as a whole seems really ingrained in we must be working all these hours, putting all this effort in, showing ourselves doing all these things. And so then the more technology you create, we just find other things to sink that time that's not necessarily wholesome and doesn't necessarily benefit us. And you know, I love technology, it's my life, but I also strictly limit how much my daughter's able to use. I try and limit my own technological use because I'm aware how much it can be a negative influence as well as a positive. It's down to how we use the technology.
Absolutely. I've been giving a lot of thought to this recently. And my dad, he used to quote this famous quote, that work fills available time, right? And I think the moment we step back and say, well, you know, we're actually only going to work 3 days or four like you guys do, and we're only going to schedule meetings on, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And if we want to do some work on a Monday or a Friday, then we can, right? Like that's what I'm starting to do. Kim and I have started to do that this week, right? So then it gives us more control, like, over our lives. But then I suppose it's what do you enjoy doing, right? Like, you got to have a balance, haven't you? What do you think, Nish? Are you sort of working towards that yourself, like getting things more of a lifestyle kind of life that you're living, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that over COVID and when we were all working from home, and I was a consultant doing two jobs in a week, so I had a 3-day-a-week job and a 2-day-a-week job, and I realized that I was sitting there going, okay, it's fine, I've got loads of time, I don't have a commute anymore, so I can probably just get all of this done. But it never works out like that. You end up working 5 days for both jobs because it just ends up just snowballing. There's never really a cutoff for people asking you for your time. And it has to be a mindset shift in order to actually get somebody to stop and move into a lesser working pattern, because we as humans somehow, maybe it is over what you mentioned, and that the industrial revolution, the 5-day working week and the 2-day weekend is a completely human, like a completely societal construct, right? Nobody's ever said, like, actually this is how much we should work, and like Guy's mentioned, we should be working less, we've got more technology, we should have more time. But there's this other thing that happens when you do work a 4-day working week. Psychologically, on a Friday or a Monday, whatever day that you choose not to work, you're there in the morning going, hang on, have I missed something? Did I do everything? So half of your working day is actually thinking about whether you've finished all your work for the week prior. So it has to be a conscious shift to moving away from your work and stepping away from it and recognizing that that makes you more productive overall. And that comes with the adoption of the technologies and accepting that that is technology that will help you be more productive. Use the kind of workflow tools, get your teams all involved in them. Because unless, like you mentioned before, that's where you have those laggards where people aren't adopting it. That's where people aren't utilizing things in the right way. That's where everyone else spends more time trying to either explain it to them or work around them or doing all these things. So as soon as everybody sort of gets on board with doing things in a certain way, then everybody can sort of reduce and replenish their mental capacity in order to become more productive overall. So I'm a massive advocate for, number one, 4-day working week, and also working less, but yeah, not reducing productivity. So yeah. I'm completely, I will speak to the hills on that, no worries.
Yeah, but I'm going to jump in there quickly. We've been talking a lot about people and technology, right? And this is kind of part of our theme throughout this series, really, of like, you know, how do we get people to embrace the technology? And, you know, I know you guys put in a lot of systems, you do a lot of big projects, you know, you work with a lot of people who basically may drag their heels, right? So if you've got any sort of advice for those people who are worried that this tech you're installing is going to remove them from their job and stuff like that, Guy?
Yeah. So a lot of the work that we do doesn't actually translate to removing people from their jobs. I've been reasonably lucky in that a lot of the projects I say I've been reasonably lucky. I think this comes back to the previous comment is work fills the available week and you make a process more efficient for people. And normally it's because someone's trying to increase sales volume or increase the other things. And so you tidy up a bit of the process, you put in a new system, but really it's because other stuff's increasing and generally it doesn't take people away. I mean, we have, and I'll let Nish talk more about this, other resistances that come from people, but certainly in terms of a project perspective, I find that generally most of our clients are not putting in systems because they want to get rid of people. They're putting in systems because of growth. And right. They want to use the same number of people to do more work.
Right, right. So what do you think, Nish? Is there a kind of struggle that you face when implementing these systems?
I think that's always the strategic requirement is to you know, have more people doing, everyone's doing the same stuff, just more of it. But there is always a struggle when you come to actually putting things in. And that comes down to people not really understanding where they then fit into the process, not really understanding that actually if you know, instead of writing things down on a piece of paper, people learn how to then write stuff onto a computer. And then instead of sort of writing things out many, many times over, they just learned how to copy and paste. And it's not, and that it is to serve this ultimate goal that we do things more efficiently. So hopefully you will be working less, but achieving more. And that comes with breaking that mindset that we have stagnated in our development today. And it comes with educating people that it's all about developing yourself and developing your own skill set. And, you know, maybe if you have more time to not do what you're spending 80% of your time doing, you'll be able to work on other things that interest you, whether that be at work, it gives you more time to think about that, but also at home. You know, maybe gets you home earlier, spend more time with your families. And people just are so resistant to that, or so resistant to even taking the time to understand it. And part of my job is always having that real almost theological conversation with people, saying, you know, it's fine, you know, maybe if you stop doing this you can do more of this. And it's just it does end up becoming a lot to do with changing mindsets and changing habits, regardless of whether the actual overall strategy is to make people more productive overall. On the ground, it's very much a hearts and minds exercise.
yeah, I can imagine. Well, it's been absolutely fantastic speaking with you, Guy and Nish, as usual. So just before we scoot off, is there anything that, like, you know, really excites you the most out of everything that you've seen in the technology industry?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah, for you, Guy, to start with, yeah. I know you've said a bit about it already, but I think the one, if you could pick one thing that excites you the most, what would it be?
I'll be honest, personal interest, it's space and the technology that's going into that. There are so many implications for us on Earth that are absolutely life-changing if you play them forward. To successfully colonize space, which is like Elon Musk's great mission out there, which is, let's pick that as like the leading private sector vision of how to do it at the moment. You have to solve entirely new engine and propulsion problems. You have to solve huge energy storage and consumption issues. To colonize Mars, you have to come up with incredibly efficient electrical systems and storage. All of these things tackle climate change on Earth. They tackle inequalities. They provide, you know, ultimately you need to provide much cheaper ways to do these, cheaper access to resources, and that filters down into technology to people that can ultimately better lives. I mean, personally, love the idea of spaceships and exploring space, but when you look at the actual technology filter down from that, and all of the thing, like going into space is hard. And up until recently, and even frankly now, we've solved it with a brute force approach, which is an absolutely giant container of explosives and point it at the sky and get there. We haven't solved it smart, because, you know, to do it in the 60s and the 70s, that was the only way to do it. But turning that into smart modern technology leads to a huge amount of new things, new composite materials. You know, it brings the idea that, you know, commercial aviation, we can suddenly have clean energy commercial aviation, because we're changing the materials we're building with, we're changing the propulsion that we're building with. So there's a lot of people who see that as a sector and go, oh, it's just billionaires wasting their money. They could be doing real things to help people. And you know what? They may well be billionaires that are wasting their own money on a personal project, but that doesn't mean that that's incompatible with, you know, the future of our species and making real differences. We've had, you know, 50, 60 years of government and private sector trying to spend money in ways to build technology. And, you know, I do think that there is a slowdown of technological innovation there. And it takes some billionaires to do some ridiculous things to ultimately result in these changes in technology. So as much as, yep, a bunch of billionaires flying around the earth definitely isn't equality, I personally am really excited at what that means for technological trickle down, because there's so many parts of it. You know, it will impact everything we've talked about today and more into people's lives, and most people won't even be aware of it when they pick up a device that we can't even imagine now in 10 years time, and that's ended up with some technology that's come from space technology that's been done. So yeah, of everything that, because I think it just crosses the entirety of our society, and from a human perspective poses some really interesting questions of what do we as a human species of the 21st, the 22nd century look like going forward. And we're at the point in the whole history of the future of humanity where these things start to happen, and that's pretty exciting as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm nodding away. For people listening to this on audio, I've been nodding away. Nish is, I don't know, I haven't been looking at Nish. I've been looking at the camera and just nodding away. She's probably been nodding as well, I imagine. So Nish, do you want to unmute your mic and tell me what you're excited about?
I was certainly nodding away. And I think that's really interesting, because I have always been off the ilk that what are all these billionaires doing running around the world? But yeah, I mean, that is an incredibly interesting perspective that you have on there. The other thing that I want to see, and I think that we've seen the start of it now, because I mentioned that I've got my electric car now, and it auto adjusts whenever I'm driving. Sometimes it adjusts to the lines to stay in your lane. So self-driving cars is something that I think that is not too far away. There's a huge amount of technology in that car that I can't even imagine. Every time I push a button, there's something else that's happening. But I think that that's a really interesting one, getting everyone onto utilizing electric energy and helping that, and how that would help the world's climate change issues. Is a really interesting concept. Obviously, taken aside from how much it takes to manufacture them and things like that, once we've got that right, which probably would come from innovations in potentially space technology and energy, you know, consumption and use, that's probably something that would be really interesting to see happen. So yeah, that's something as well.
Super. Yeah, I'm, as you can tell, I'm interested in productivity at the moment. I'm interested in everything, right? But if I was going to pick one, it would be creating more balanced lives for people. That's really just so important. It's like, in my mind, that's what I think that should happen, really. But it's been super. I've really enjoyed speaking with you guys. Thank you so much, Guy, for dropping by. And thank you, Nish, again. It's been lovely working with you on this series. Let me I've got to find the outro. I have so many things going on here. Here we go.
Thanks very much for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen.